Golf Smarter number 378, published on April 2, 2013, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And by AlphaBrain by Onnit Labs. AlphaBrain is now being used by golfers on the tour and around the world because it has 11 ingredients that are perfectly tailored to the most mental of games and clinically tested to improve your driving accuracy. Learn more by clicking on the AlphaBrain ad at golfsmarter.com. And on today's ScoreZone Short Game Academy, the Wedge Guy explains bounce and what the proprietary Score Golf V-Sole means and why it's going to help your short game.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Power of Six, practice strategies with Jim Waldron.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter, Jim.
Fred, it's great to be back with you.
Where are you in the world these days?
I am on the north shore of Oahu.
I hate you.
For the next 6 weeks of some time off, but some teaching, too.
I hate you even more.
Someone's got to do it. Oh, why not me, right?
Wah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how are things at the Balance Point Golf Schools?
That's actually, they've been really good, very busy. The summer season in Portland, we've already filled up our first school.
Wow.
In May, and we're starting to fill up our second one in June. Considering how bad the economy has been the last few years, it's been we're looking at really good goals.
Yeah, there's no bad economy.
Yeah.
Right now, stock market's exploding, Apple's tanking,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And since we're talking about it right now and classes are filling up, why don't you give the URL and let people know where they can find Balance Point Golf Schools and more about it so they can sign up?
Yeah, it's balancepointgolf.com. In fact, we're going to get our brand new website online, I think, in the next 2 or 3 days, or for sure next week at the latest.
Well, that means by the time this is published, your brand new website is ready to go.
That's right. And it's going to have just a lot more, just better layout, easier to navigate, a lot more content, more photos, some video. It'll link to our new YouTube channel.
Oh, good. Good.
But you know, we just talked about what a Luddite I am. I still don't have one as we speak, but it will be up.
But you'll have a channel all ready to go. Yeah. You just have no content.
Yeah.
Well, then you're going to have to come back we're going to have to get together so I can produce some stuff for you.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll have some audio files, some video. It's good. The old website was, God, I don't think it changed much in the last like 8 or 9 years. So
well,
it's overdue.
You said the economy, you mentioned the economy. I think it is better because everybody's redoing their website in 2013.
Is that right?
Oh, I'm redoing Golf Smarter right now, and we're going to make it so you can contribute writing. I mean, hopefully you're going to be one of our contributing editors here.
Sure, love to, yeah.
Awesome. And then also Green Creative, I'm redoing that one as well. But anyway,
oh, cool.
Let's talk about golf, please, because you've
sure,
got a
absolutely.
Fascinating topic that I'm really excited to pursue, and that you termed as practice strategies.
Correct.
Tell me more.
Something isn't talked about a lot in golf instruction circles to the detriment of average golfers especially, is how do you practice effectively? How do you take, because most instruction is about what you should be doing with your club or your body, or in the case of mental game, your mind. We also know most instruction is geared toward, hopefully if it's good instruction, if it's quality instruction, it's geared toward, on the physical side of the game, toward forming new and dominant habit patterns, physical movement patterns that are so habitual that they're automatic, they manifest automatic, and you don't have to think about them, right? That should be the goal. Anytime you try to make a physical change, as much as possible, you want to make that change be a dominant habit pattern, i.e. something you don't have to think about. And that means you have to practice. And, one of the hard things about golf is, as you know, there's so many different types of shots you need to learn. to score well and to improve your game. And, you know, I've always been an advocate of being very clear about laying out a practice plan for every student, whether they're a lesson student or a golf school student. But it's a complicated topic, and it's only been until the last, I don't know, year or so, I felt I've kind of got a really good handle on it, because there's more than one way to do it. There's you know, I don't know, half a dozen or so major ways you can practice. And so there's some rules for effective practice, and there's some sort of categories of effective practice I thought we could talk about today.
Awesome. So I'm just curious. I know that we've talked about this before, but does muscle memory fall into that? And do you buy into muscle memory? Some people think it's ridiculous, and some people think it's the only way to go.
You know, Hogan was actually, in the golf world, he coined the term in an interview back, I think, in the 60s with, I think it was Golf Digest. And then in his last interview with Golf Digest, which I think was in 1987, he said something like, I wish I'd never coined the term in that interview, because what people took it to mean was, let's talk to our body parts and try to get them to behave better, which, of course, is that stuff, that superstitious nonsense that I've been critical of on your show and all the previous, however many times I've been on guests. I think it was my 7th appearance, something like that.
Congratulations.
So that sort of the colloquial definition of it is wrong. You know, muscles don't have memory. And so talking to body parts is worse than useless. In fact, in the future, we're going to do a show on the yips, right?
Absolutely, and that may
be
our...
people get the yips. They talk to body parts. That's the pre-yip stage. So that sense, muscle memory is a myth. What it really is the scientific term is motor memory, and there's different types. There's three different kinds. There's working memory, which lasts just a few seconds. There's short-term memory, which lasts, you know, hours or a few days. And there's what's called long-term motor memory, which basically is a dominant habit, which is... as long as the back part of your brain, where that motor memory program exists in the cerebellum, stays healthy, you'll have that habit pattern to the day you die. And that's kind of what we want to have, is long-term motor memory, right?
Right, right.
So you couldn't do it wrong if you tried.
Well, you know, but when you, that's just, you know, so many people just go out and they don't take lessons. They just start swinging, and then this is what they get ingrained. And then if you get to the point where I am now of trying to take lessons and relearn everything, trying to eliminate all the bad habits and you know, mishits because of your bad habits, it makes it difficult to make that long-term memory work when you're fighting inside your head.
People often, average golfers especially, they have sort of, I call it a spinning the wheels sort of syndrome. You mean they take a lesson or two or three or a golf school, or they read a book and they try it and it kind of works for a while, and then after a couple of weeks it doesn't work, and they move on to the next tip. You know, that just doesn't work. I mean, that literally is like the hamster on the wheel and condemned to eternity spinning on the wheel. So what you need is an intelligent, strategic approach to how you sort of apportion your time, especially if you're not retired, if you're still working for a living. You've only got so much time in a given week you can devote to practice. And my whole thing has been the last couple of years is trying to come up with a way you can sort of cover all the bases of improving, or at least maintaining, your current skill level in certain of the key areas. And this is where the money, you know, the Moneyball book and movie we talked about earlier approach kind of kicked in a few years ago for me, which is, you know, not all golf shots are created equal. Some are more important in terms of influence on your score, much more important than others.
Sure.
And so, you know, a truly intelligent and effective practice plan would recognize that as being a true fact, so you aren't wasting your time practicing skills that are not going to result in significant score improvement.
And excuse me for interrupting, but that begs the question, is there a least important shot in regards to your score?
You know, that's a good question. I haven't actually put it in those terms before. I know if I had to pick one, especially for average golfers, it's probably more than one. There are people right now. In fact, there are some PGA Tour pros who are hiring. There's three guys I know of. I don't recall any of these three guys' names, unfortunately, off the top of my head. Otherwise, I would give them credit. That are doing some pretty groundbreaking research. One guy I know has been. He used to write a column for Golf Digest. He's been doing it for over 40 years. I would probably guess the least important skill to practice, that's going to be the least productive, is putts between 15 and roughly 30 feet. Because the odds you're going to make a putt between 15 and 30 feet, even if you're a tour pro, is very, very much low on the probability scale. Mm-hmm. And if you're decent, not great, as long as you're decent at putting, you're not going to three putt that often if you're decent already from between 15 and 30 feet. And it's almost certainly going to be, most of the time, it's going to be a two putt. So you're not going to gain a stroke in that skill area, and you're probably not going to lose any strokes.
Hmm. Very
right. So that's just off the top of my head. But
that's good.
So here's what it is. So I'm going to start. I call this the power of six. There are six. You could say shot categories or golf shot skill categories that are extremely important for all skill levels from tour pros down to beginners. Well, maybe not beginners, because one of these is driver, and beginners shouldn't be hitting the driver because they don't have the skill. But let's say if you can break 95 and you have at least 90 mile an hour club head speed with your driver, because if you're lower than 90, you're better off hitting the 3-wood. You'll actually go further and straighter than the driver. But even if you are using a 3-wood, it's one of the six categories of highly important shots in terms of influence on your score is your driver, or, again, the people who have slower swing speeds are their 3-wood. That's something that, great players historically have all said. I mean, Nicklaus said it. Tiger has said the driver is the most important scoring weapon in the bag. Ben Hogan said it. Sam Snead has said it. Byron Nelson said it. Ken Venturi said it. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it, because most holes are par fours or par fives. You're going to use that to begin the hole, right?
Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking that the driver may be the least important, but we're talking about the tee shot. Or are we talking about hitting it with your driver?
No, we're talking a tee shot. And let me go back a little bit. One of the three men I mentioned who've done research, and we'll just call them the golf statisticians, and I think the other two are either agreeing with this or close to agreeing with it. He said the number one predictor of a low score for someone who is, I think he said, shooting like right around 105 or less, so maybe not a beginner, but someone who's been playing a little bit, who, if you can shoot 105 or better, there's one predictor, one statistical predictor of a lower than average score for that round of golf. Almost everybody gets it wrong. What do you think it is?
Fairways.
No. Close, because the answer involves that. It's a secondary effect.
So then I'd go greens and regulation.
Correct. Greens and regulation. That's the number one stat.
Sure.
It presents a problem, though, because to hit a green in regulation or to hit a high number, a high percentage, the tour pros today average around 13 out of 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
Much lower than most people think. When they're playing well, it might be 16 or 17, but, the average is around 13, 13 and a half, something like that. The problem with that stat for average golfers is to achieve it, you have to have a good golf swing. You have to have a fundamentally sound golf swing. Most average golfers don't take the time. They don't spend the money that's required on finding a quality teacher to teach them the fundamentals. Or if they do spend the money, they don't spend the time practicing it long enough to form a fundamentally sound golf swing. But for those people who do, that opens up a whole doorway to much, much improved scoring, greens and regulation. Because greens and regulation secondarily implies hitting the fairway and hitting it pretty long off the tee box with your driver or with your 3-wood and in the fairway. So the second category is fairways, like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
but not just hitting the fairway, but hitting it long off the tee is also a big advantage to scoring. Meaning, wouldn't you rather have an 8-iron in as your second shot club as opposed to a 4-iron?
Yeah, which is the whole idea behind tee it forward. Is to give
exactly right.
Yeah,
exactly
is to give everyone the chance to hit it with an 8-iron in.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to hitting it from, your 3-wood trying to get it in, because you're playing from tees that you shouldn't be playing from.
Absolutely. So, so that's the first one of the power of six. If you want to improve your score, you need to learn to hit your tee ball club, whether it's a driver, 3-wood, 5-wood, whatever your skill level can handle, further than you do now. I'm talking 20, 30, 40 yards further on average. And I always tell people that if you're a male, and you're between the ages of 14 and 55, you want to eventually get to the point, and you're healthy, obviously you have to be healthy to do this, to where your average distance should be at least 250 yards carry and roll, and you want to shoot toward more like toward 260 with
wow.
today's equipment. Because if you're currently hitting at 230 off the tee, mm-hmm. and through a combination of working on your swing and maybe getting fit for a new and better driver, if you can make your distance go up 30 yards from 230 to 260, you'll be hitting at least two, probably three clubs shorter in to the hole, into the green, which greatly improves your odds of hitting the green in regulation. Because, it's an 8-iron instead of a 5-iron, for example, right? So it's pretty important. That driver is just, I believe of all the clubs in the bag, once you can break around 95, once you're decent enough in terms of your physical skills to be hitting a driver to begin with, it's more important than your putter. It's more important than your wedge.
Oh, gosh. You're just crushing me right now, because I keep telling people it's not about how far, it's about how close. And I just...
You mean how accurate you mean, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, not how far you hit it, it's how close you get it to the pin, right?
True, but again, it's as you know, it's easier to get it closer to the pin if you hit it in the fairway and out there and down there a long way.
Because I just see people practicing with their driver only. You know, you go to the driving range.
They think that's the most important thing.
I'm like, I don't think it's the most important thing. And here you are telling me it's now the most important thing to lowering your score.
It's the most important thing, again, if you have the ability to hit it, right? If your swing is decent enough to where you can actually get around 95 miles or for sure 90 at minimum or higher.
Okay, so he's got the caveat there. Good recovery, coach.
Yeah, no, it's true. Because some people don't have the ability to hit it, so they shouldn't be hitting it to begin with. But then you hand him a 3-wood. So whatever, whether it's a 5-wood for the really high handicappers, a 3-wood for the sort of the moderately high handicap players out there, and a driver for the intermediate advanced players, whichever those three clubs it is, you have to hit that club with a fairly high degree of consistency in terms of solidness of contact, reasonable club head speed, so the ball and being on plane with a square club face, so the ball goes a fairly long way and in the fairway, or at the worst, the crookedest it's going to be is in the first cut of rough, because mm-hmm. you can still score well from the first cut of rough, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You can't score well if you're hitting it into the trees, into the fairway bunkers, into the water or OB. That's why it's not just long; it's long and straight.
Right, and that's when we get to golf smarter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because the other thing I always say to people, you never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you never want to have two bad shots in a row.
No, especially when you don't have to.
Right.
Check their ego and stop it.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Stop, get your ego away. You can't get there. You are not Tiger Woods.
That's right. That's right. Anyhow, so that's one of the six mm-hmm. important, in terms of shots that influence your score. Then the second one is... And I think from my research, from my angle, I'm not so sure these other three, the golf wizards would agree with this, but it's pretty obvious to me that the one area, that's the second area of, and probably in order, would be second most important, would be super short putts from 2 to 6 feet.
Mm.
If you miss a putt from 2 to 6 feet, you're going to be pissed off, and rightfully so, because you just wasted a stroke.
Yep.
I mean, unless it's a very fast downhill breaking putt, particularly left to right breaking putt for a right-hander, which are kind of hard to make. If it's not that kind of putt, it's more of a normal slope and not a lot of break, and you miss it, you just wasted a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's things you can do to improve your odds of making those short putts, which we'll talk about in another episode, because I know we're doing one on putting. But basically, if you're not practicing your short putts, you're probably scoring 3, 4, 5, 6 strokes higher than you need to.
Right.
The tour pros spend hours and hours and hours. They spend very little time practicing medium length putts in that 15 to 35 foot range. They spend a lot of time on super short putts, a fair amount of time from 8 to 15 feet, which is often their birdie range, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the super short putts are to make par, occasionally to make birdie if you hit it really close on a par 4 or maybe on your third shot on fourth shot on a par 5, or maybe like a second putt on a par 5, right? So you're making par, and if you're an average golfer, you're saving you're making bogey with that putt in the 2 to 6 foot range. So if you miss it, now it's a double.
And can we make a new rule here? Can we make a new rule about those super short putts? I mean, you know, 6 feet, but it, when you're playing with your buddies and you've got a 2 footer or a 3 footer left, and they say it's good, pick it up, right? Can we just
my buddies don't say that.
I bet. Well, I bet because they want to beat you.
It's got to be 18 inches or less for a gimme.
No, I've had. Yeah, that's good. That's good. You know. But I want to say that if someone tells you it's good and you go over to knock it in the hole because you want to hear the happy sound, but you miss, I'm sorry, you don't get to pick it up and go, well, no, that was good. You said it was good.
No,
if you putt it, you miss. You know, yeah, I'm sorry. It doesn't count as a gimme on that one. Knock it off.
Yep.
So just pick it up. So help the pace of play.
That's an important, I mean, that's obviously an important, people, average golfer, people who shoot like, say, 85 to 100, they're not good super short putters. They need to take some instruction on how to make those short putts, and they need to practice it, right, and on a regular basis. And a lot, you know, you can practice that at home at night if you have a normal kind of, if you don't have like 1975 shag carpeting in your house, you can probably just do it at night on your living room carpet, right?
Oh, $25 and you can get one of those little practice putting things that has the ball return on it. And I just, I have one in my office, and when I'm on the phone or waiting for something to render while I'm producing video or something, I'm just practicing my putting all day long.
Yeah. Okay, here's the third category.
But before you get to that third category. Yeah. I apologize to the audience because I continue to interrupt you, but you're used to it with me. I just want to say that, you know, as I have in the past, that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to give the Golf Smarter audience an opportunity to try it for free, a free audiobook of your choice from their incredible library. And one audiobook that we would like you to consider is the one that Jim is going to refer to us. What would you say?
The Stuart Brand book, right?
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, that's what we talked about. We talked about being old hippies out of San Francisco, and Stuart Brand's name came up. So
Whole Earth Catalog.
The Whole Earth Discipline, it's called. Yeah, the Whole Earth Catalog with Stuart Brand in the 70s and 80s, name that we've heard. He's recently done a new TED Talk, which was fascinating. But Stuart Brand and Johnny Heller narrate his Whole Earth Discipline, an Eco-Pragmatist Manifesto. And that could be your first book. Why not? It's 13 and a half hours long, and it's got great ratings from customers on the Audible website. So if you want to get this book for free or any book of your choice, please go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is spelled A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Thank you, my friend, for the recommendation.
You're
now,
welcome.
Let's get to number three.
Number three, which one of the golf stats guys calls, and Richie, I just don't remember your last name. I apologize, but his first name is Richie. He's actually working with some tour pros now. He calls it the danger zone. And I've been teaching this for, God, for 15 years now, that there's one type of shot, again, particularly for average golfers, though it also applies to tour pros, that is almost always, if your average handicap is between maybe a 6 and a 20, especially for those guys, this range is going to cost you some strokes. And that's the 175 to roughly 215 yard range. Maybe if you're a longer hitter, average player, maybe 185 to 225. So that's your 3, 4, 5 irons or your hybrid equivalent, maybe 2, 3, and 4 hybrid, your 5 wood. Those are the clubs that cost people almost always, almost every round of golf, you know, certainly a few strokes per round.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is people don't have enough fundamentals. They're not fundamentally sound enough in their ball striking skill to hit those longer clubs, both the required distance. Let's say it's a 200 yard shot. For me, that would be a 3 iron, or it would be my 22-degree hybrid. That's a long par 3. It's It's your second shot on a long par four, if you're an average golfer. It could be your second shot on a short par five, if you're a pretty good average golfer, low handicapper. But oftentimes on these long par threes or long approaches on par fours, you hit it way short in the bunker or way short in the water in front of the green, or you miss it wildly to the left or right in the bushes, the rough, or the trees, right? Mm-hmm. And so now you're scrambling to try to get up and down for par, and because it went in a really bad place, your odds of getting up and down, even if you were a tour pro, are pretty much zero. So, but you know, people don't probably. How many times you see people practicing with their four or five iron on the driving range? They just don't.
Mm-mm.
You know, and the reason they don't is they don't hit it well, and because they don't hit it well, in the short term, it hurts their confidence. So they go to their eight iron, their six iron, their seven iron. You know, and I always tell my students, look, you know, even if you're not working on a major swing change, just take the swing you have, warts and all. If you work with the hybrids and in the four or five iron. And even five wood, and learn to hit those clubs at least, say, 25% better than you're hitting now, that's going to have a huge impact on your score.
Hmm.
Because you're going to feel more confident when you play. When you have that club in your hand and you're standing over a 200-yard par 3 tee shot and there's water in front of the green, right, and maybe bunkers behind the green, and OB left and a lot of trees and high grass on the right, basically you have to hit the green to make par, right? You got no bailout area. You're probably not going to put a really bad swing on it, at least not most of the time, because you feel confident, because you've seen yourself hit that shot 200 yards relatively straight, say 6 or 7 out of 10 balls on the driving range, right? Mm-hmm. Because you put the practice time in. So, Richie calls that the danger zone. That's an area, even for tour pros, where they either miss the green badly or they hit the green and trickle over the back edge, or you know, end up in a bunker, then they fail to get up and down. So that's an area that average golfers just don't practice, and they should be.
Mm. Excellent. Excellent advice. And don't just swing the club to swing the club. Pick a target. I mean, you should be focusing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
In your practice?
And put alignment sticks down on the ground so you know you're aiming where you think you are. Mm-hmm. You'll never see a pro practice without an alignment stick on the ground. They always use them.
Mm.
Anyhow, so that's pretty important. Number four of the power of six is the mental game, particularly what I call the art of shot making, which is what happens from the beginning of your pre-shot routine. When you're standing behind the ball and you've picked your club, that's when the creative, you know, sort of the art of shot making starts, right? And it lasts all the way through your golf swing until you arrive at the finish of your swing. And the part that's really important is how your mind, I'm talking conscious mind here, not subconscious, how your conscious mind is working from right before you trigger your takeaway throughout the entire backswing, throughout the entire forward swing to your finish. Because it's within the swing motion itself that you can sabotage yourself by causing some form of a mistake, like a flinch or a yip or deceleration or an overacceleration or hit impulse or scooping impulse or steering impulse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because, in other words, if your mind is not working properly, it's not focusing where it should be focusing, something bad's going to happen, for sure, to disrupt your body motion, which disrupts your club motion, which disrupts your impact, which creates the bad shot that you're trying to avoid in the first place. So that basically means you have to have a consistent pre-shot routine, number one. Number two, you have to learn how to focus your mind. Most people have what we call wandering minds, right? And that just basically means pick one thing. Could be the target, for example. Could be your grip pressure. Could be rhythm. Could be tempo. There's a number of things that could be, theoretically.
Oh, man. Would Alpha Brain love it if I were to come in and do a plug for their product right about now? and that's not that I just didn't do that, but they'll be happy with it. I just mentioned to help your mental game, don't forget Alpha Brain. But, you know, mental game has been the crux of my program, my content from the very beginning. I've always felt that
that's been your bias, yeah.
Yeah, like is that I just think that if you have that kind of a game, if you understand it, you don't beat yourself up, you don't become your worst enemy, as Dr. Joe Parent would say, then you're going to lower your scores.
Yeah, there's no question. And the key is to have only one focal point per swing. And there are a couple exceptions to that, but for my students, they have to be about five handicaps or better, where they have one on the backswing and they switch to a second one on the forward swing.
Hmm.
But that's, again, only for advanced players. Everybody else, if you're about a 6 handicap or higher, you should have one focus for your mind that your mind is engaged with from about 1 second before you start your backswing, and it stays with that one thing all the way to your finish. You know, it sounds easy, right, when we talk about it, but for most people, when they first practice this, it's very, very difficult. Right. That could be a whole episode.
Yeah. And again, for those who have not tried it yet, Alpha Brain really, I know for me, it's just, it helps quiet all that extra noise in your head.
You can't have a noisy mind to play good golf.
Right, awesome. Right. And we've had Matt Every. I don't know if you know who Matt Every is.
He's, oh, sure, I know Matt. Yeah.
Well, he's all over Alpha Brain, and we've had him on the show a number of times now talking about it. And he says that it's the year that he started taking Alpha Brain, he went from a $500,000 a year of winnings to $2 million 1 year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very impressive. Yeah. Now, listen, before we get to number five and number six, the classic tees, we've hit our 30-minute mark. So can we stick around and do part two on a members-only episode for next week?
Yeah, absolutely. Love to.
All right, so we'll do five and six, and then let's talk about the.
It's not going to take long to present the information on five and six, but where it really gets interesting is how you can design your own practice program so you're covering all six of these.
Okay. All right, well, yep. That's enough of a tease. So if you are not a member of Golf Smarter for members only, then you should go to golfsmarter.com and join today, because then you'll be able to hear number five and six and the yips and putting with Jim Waldron, part two of this conversation. And you'll have access to our entire archives of we're in our eighth year of programming on Golf Smarter, and you can have access to all of those programs. And instead of just getting one episode every other week, as you're doing now, if you're downloading when we publish them, you'll get a new episode every week. So you'll have something to do each week to help you improve your golf game. So, Jim, stick around, and we're going to do Golf Smarter for Members Only coming up soon. Thanks so much for agreeing to do that.
You bet. Thanks, Fred.
It's time once again for the Score Zone Short Game Academy on the Golf Smarter podcast with our special guest, CEO of Score Golf, Terry Kaler. Terry, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. This is the segment where you get to answer the question that has been submitted by a Golf Smarter listener. And they are going to receive a gift because you're answering their question. They're going to receive a customized Score 4161 scoring club. I always want to say wedge, but I'm going to say scoring club for you, because they came to golfsmarter.com and clicked on the Score Zone Short Game Academy button. And we still want to remind every listener that you get a discount if you use the coupon code GOLFSMARTER when you check out, 10% off your entire order at Score Golf, and get one of these phenomenal wedges that is going to lower your score because it is going to change the way you approach the greens. It's an amazing club, and the more we learn, the better we get. Anyway, this question comes in from Tak Teoyama of San Jose, California, and he's done his research. He says he hears a lot about the VSOL grind, and many of your customers comment on the need to learn how to use this grind. So his question is, what is so unique about the grind, and how does it benefit different shots? In other words, he says, what needs to be learned from your VSOL grind?
Well, I think first appreciate you sending in your question. Glad you've been doing your homework. We get a lot of questions about the VSOL, and some of the, I don't know where you're reading about the customers commenting on the need to learn, but this sole reacts in the turf differently than any other wedge on the market. And when I say you need to learn how to use it, what really meaning is you need to understand or experience this new feel. This club rejects out of the turf differently, and let me try to explain. Conventional wedge design has the manufacturers offer a wide range of bounces, low bounces and high bounces and tour grinds and all of this thing. And my experience is what we hear day after day, week after week, is people are very confused. But what we do know is that a higher bounce angle does help get the club out of softer turf and fluffier lies. Conversely, a low bounce angle is more effective when the ball is sitting tight on a close crop fairway or firmer turf or hard pan or wet sand. So the industry has offered us these multiple options for years, but we have to make a choice in the store for the grind that we want to take to the course. And yet we don't know what our next lie is going to look like. And I felt like, well, then that doesn't make optional various grinds a very good solution because I can't carry all of them. It was on a trip to Scotland a number of years ago, back in 1990 to be exact, that I encountered the firm turf of the UK and I had a sand wedge and found it to be a very ineffective tool around the greens at St. Andrews because the first day we were there, because the ground is so firm and this big sole sand wedge was bouncing into the middle of the ball and not performing well. So I went down the street to Mr. Ochterlony's golf shop and asked if I could use his grinder. I just had this idea, and I ground the back part of the sole down to where it had much less bounce, but I left that steep bounce angle in the front and then even accented that a little bit and ground out a little of the leading edge. Really uglied up my wedge quite a bit. But what I found is I had created a club that would kind of glide along the turf rather than bounce off of it when the lie was tight. But yet when I would get into one of these soft lies or get into a bunker, this club still had almost all the effectiveness that I had had before I ground away on it. So that got me back to the workshop and grinding when I got back. And that's where the V-Sole was born. You don't really have to learn how to use it differently other than you hit some shots with it and watch what the ball does because of the sole and feel how the sole interacts with the turf, which then helps you understand what you can do with it to hit the kind of shots you want to hit and to experiment and broaden your repertoire, so to speak. I hope that kind of explains that, but you know, it's not some radically different thing that requires an owner's manual, but it does give you more opportunities to try different things. And you can hood down a wedge, for example, a little bit and still hit really good shots off a tight turf. And even if it's a little soft, if you hood down a conventional low bounce wedge, you're going to hood all the bounce out of it and you're going to turn it into just a ditch digger. By the same token, if you get into a tight line, you lay it open a little bit with a conventional wedge, you're accenting that high bounce and really making it a dangerous tool for that tight lie. And this V-Sole doesn't elevate your leading edge as much, so it won't skip up into the ball. Don't be afraid of the V-Sole because you think you have to learn something new. Be drawn to the V-Sole because it lets you learn something new and different ways to hit different shots. And two of my favorite lines that customers gave us, one was the V-Sole, it never met a lie it didn't like. And we didn't come up with that. Our customers came up with that and said it was okay if we started using it. And the other one is I had a customer say, it forgives my mistakes, but it doesn't get in the way of what I know how to do. Mm. So it's a versatile sole. The V stands for the shape. The V stands for versatility. And we were trying to create a sole, and we did, which really didn't. There isn't a lie out there that the sole doesn't like. And we invite you to try them. We have trial program. You know, we'll put a club in your hands and let you see for yourself what it's capable of doing.
I hate to open a can of worms on this one, Terry, but with all the different lies that you're talking about, how do we practice those? Tell me, you know, like on a practice session with these wedges, because, you know, people are expecting to go out with their new Score Golf wedges and be able to pull these off, but they don't get the feel for the club. So what would you recommend being practice sessions with these clubs and different lies and how to take advantage of that?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways to do it. It depends on where you play your golf. I'm very fortunate, belong to a private club, but we don't have very big crowds. And one of my favorite exercises is in the late evening to throw my bag on my shoulder and take about an hour to play three holes. And around each green, I just take a couple of wedges and three or four balls, and I just work my way around that green, chipping and pitching from different lies, bunkers, uphill, side hill, bare, fluffy. Because that's a real course condition. It's really worth a green fee to go out in the very twilight and don't worry about getting nine holes in and shooting a score. Worry about getting your 2 hours on the golf course that you paid for. And practice, there's no substitute for practicing your short game on the golf course because those are real conditions that you're going to encounter. But another option is to take your wedges and go over to a schoolyard or somewhere that isn't manicured like a golf course, and you can find areas where the kids have been running around that's packed tighter than heck. You can find areas that are fluffy over by the fence or where the kids don't play. And you can find all different kinds of turf and just, you know, hit shots off of that, little soft shots, and watch how the club reacts to the turf, watch how the ball reacts to the club. You don't have to practice your short game necessarily on the golf course. But you, what you're trying, there's two elements of practicing your short game scoring shots. One element is practicing your technique, which you can do on the driving range, just chipping balls around on the driving range, practicing your tempo, practicing ball contact. And then the other part of practicing is practicing in real situations where, as I described earlier, you go out on the golf course with, if you're lucky enough to live on a golf course, just go around the green that's close to your house, but late in the evening, or take your bag, like I said, and play three holes, but don't worry about score. You're practicing this session, and it's worth that twilight nine-hole green fee to get that golf course to yourself for a couple hours and, you know, go play that hole and chip around on the green and, you know, if it's not all that crowded in the evening. And I understand I'm fortunate that I play in this kind of facility, but where there's a will, there's a way, Doc. And Fred.
It was my question.
You don't get a free wedge. You already got a whole bag
full. Yeah, well, you know. But it's interesting because it made me think about if you're lucky enough to work at a range that's a grass range. I know that I never do this, but I should, practicing hitting out of all those divots. I mean, I'm always looking for the nicest, fluffiest piece of grass to hit from, but maybe I should just be dropping balls in divots and all the crap that's sitting around the,
well, exactly,
the practice
area.
Well,
exactly. And you can go down to one end of the range or the other where you can practice off the mowed tee line, and you can throw some balls over in that unmowed rough area. And typically you can find a place over there where maybe the guy drives the mower back and forth from the maintenance barn that's mowed down pretty tight and kind of packed tight from being trafficked on, you know, and most people aren't going to care if you go hit a few balls from there, and you're not really hitting full shots all the time. It's, you know, these where the club reacts to the ball and the turf is most critical at the slower club head speeds.
And the other thing that I think would be of great value is, when you're out doing that, don't just practice your swing. Pick a target. Focus on the target, right? Especially when you're talking about short game, is not just swing, 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 but see how consistently you can get to the target that you want to get to, and then pick various targets.
Well, that's what I was talking about. You know, you go to the practice range to practice your swing and your mechanics and your technique.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the golf course doing this kind of practice, you're practicing your visualization skills, your ability to picture a shot, your ability to make the ball do what you wanted it to do. Don't practice blindly. Practice with a mission and practice with a vision and practice every shot. Have a goal for that, you know, and picture the trajectory. And, you know, Dr. David Cook is so big on visualization in his book, Golf Sacred Journey, 7 Days in Utopia, is a fabulous story. And for all of us, for life, business, and golf. But his, one of his big lines is the game is played in front of the ball. Everything that's getting ready to happen is where the game is played, not that which just happened.
Mm, very interesting. Well, this again, what I love about this partnership that Golf Smarter and Score Golf has is that we're not just throwing out commercials here to say, go out and buy these new wedges because they're really great. No, these are scoring clubs that we want to teach you about, and we want to help you learn how to get better. And I just really appreciate the time that you've put into this. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I enjoy talking to golfers, whether it's direct one-on-one or one on a bunch as we do here. And we always have an opportunity for somebody to get interaction with us. And my whole world revolves around helping people play better. I think the game, the better you play, the more fun it is. And yeah. I never met a golfer said, well, I'm as good as I want to be. I've never met that guy yet.
And I've only met one guy ever who says, yeah, I'm a good golfer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I'm not very good. I shoot about 80. Well, really? Because you're about in the top 4% of golfers in the world then. So.
Right. You know. Yeah, and then what about those guys in the tour? Yeah, it was okay. I had a couple good putts today, but I only shot a 68. You know, it's like, come on, leave me alone.
But I mean, you never, and John Madden had one of the best lines, you never get golf. Mm-hmm. I mean, no matter how good you play, you always can see, God, but I had that 3 foot on 12, or man, if I wouldn't have missed that fairway on 9, or there's always something. And that's what makes golf so wonderful.
And the years that I spent, I don't know if I've told you this, but I spent 3 years as John Madden's engineer. And we talked a lot about it because neither of us were playing golf at the time. And he says, you know, if I have my choice of starting a new sport and I had to choose between golf and tennis, I'd much rather start with tennis. And I'm like, why? And he says, because when you're a bad golfer, you're out there all day long. When you're a bad tennis player, you're done in 20 minutes.
Well, there you go.
Oh, he was awesome. As are you, Terry Kaler. Thanks again. And again, we remind all listeners, check out Score Golf, and it's S-C-O-R. Please remember that, Score Golf. And make sure that when you get all your questions answered and you're ready to pull the trigger and get yourself some Score 41-61 wedges, use the words Golf Smarter. Whether you're talking to someone on the phone or using on the website, if you use that Golf Smarter checkout code, you're going to get 10% off your entire purchase. And we thank you very much for that. Terry, speak with you again soon.
Okay, it's always fun.
You heard me mention Alpha Brain while Jim and I were discussing practicing the mental part of your game. And I've talked about swing changes and that I'm going through right now. And it's, as we've discussed so many times, results with swing changes are slow. You're not going to see lower scores soon. It could take months. It could take years. It's a very frustrating process. But during my transition, I've also been using Alpha Brain when I play. And during my practice sessions as well, but I'll take two during the warm up, and then I'll take two more Alpha Brain at the turn. And I really believe that it's why I am able to stay calm and focused during my round. The Alpha Brain is having a huge effect, and it's really helping me. And my proof, I guess, would be that my last two rounds, I only had one triple bogey. That's a big deal for me to not have any triple bogeys, and to only have one in two rounds makes me feel really good. Right now, if I can play bogey golf, keep the doubles to a minimum and eliminate triples, I'm a happy daddy, I'm telling you. So listen, I'm not going to guarantee that Alpha Brain will work for everyone, but I do want you to give it a try and see for yourself the impact that it can have on your game. So try the 30-count bottle to start, or just go ahead and get the 90-count bottle and receive some free gifts with your order. Just make sure that you use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER so that you get 10% off your entire order. And thanks to our newest Golf Smarter members, Ben Kelly of Harrison, Australia, and Mike McEachern of Maitland, Canada, both of you are going to receive a free 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain, courtesy of Onnit Labs. We thank them very much for their continued support. For more about Onnit Labs and all their products and Alpha Brain, especially for your golf game, click on the Alpha Brain banner at golfsmarter.com. So I'm headed over to Scottsdale, Arizona tomorrow to play some golf with my buddies, and I am also going to be spending time doing some more interviews down there while I'm with various people. Ranging from golf ball manufacturer to an instructor to a training center. So I hope to have a lot of interesting content for you coming up in the next few episodes as I bring back some recordings from Valley of the Sun. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you know I'd love to hear from you. So click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.